life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. For the Dr. Stem Show, will give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
Welcome to the Dr. Stem Show. As you know, every week we bring you stories, interviews to motivate you, empower you, inspire you. But this week, I hope this one will be more educational as well as inspiring. I'm always scouting for guests that will enhance our show. And this week, what I found was something that was, you know what, beyond ordinary. And this was an amazing blogger who's also a student, a freelance web designer, and also a model. Her name is Iwani. She was, you know, gracious enough to correct me, because as soon as I saw Iwani, my eyes ran to Imani. She's like, no, Dr. Sam, my name is Iwani. So I want to welcome Iwani Mawocha to the show. Welcome to the show, Iwani.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stem.
you make us proud. I can't remember what happened was a few weeks ago, a video came through my WhatsApp, and it was your video of what I am titling this show after, Africa is not a country. And it came through, and the very first thing I say to myself, I have to interview this young lady, because that was a great, great video.
Thank you.
Yeah. So before we even get to that, what country are you in? Because I see Singapore, and then I see something about Africa there. I mean, I can't remember what country I saw another blog from, but where are you based right now?
Right now I'm in university in Singapore, but my family is based in Uganda.
Oh, that's why I think, yeah. I had seen something about Uganda. I'm like, okay, so where is she based in? So let's talk a little bit about your background. Where were you born, and are you Zimbabwean, South African? Because then I read some of the blogs. I'm like, okay, are you a mixture of both? Tell us a little bit about Iwani.
I feel like I'm a mix of Southern African, because we've moved around my whole life. My parents are Zimbabwean, so I identify most strongly with Zimbabwe, but the longest time I've ever spent in a country was in Swaziland, and before that, South Africa. So I feel as though I'm a sort of hybrid of those three countries. And so it's been hard for me to say, where are you from exactly? Because I don't think that my identity would be the same if I excluded any one of those countries. So I like to say I'm Southern African, just to sort of be a bit more general.
That is quite interesting, because I'm also from Zimbabwe, but then when we grew up, your identity was where your parents are from, and also, you know, I mean, so it didn't matter whether you were born in South Africa or Swaziland or in England, as long as your parents were Zimbabwean, then you identified as Zimbabwean. But you young, you know, wise people these days are going, well, my parents my parents are from Zimbabwe, but I'm not. I wasn't born in Zimbabwe, so that's quite interesting. Were you born in South Africa, though?
Well, yeah. I'm like, where was I born now? But sorry, just to answer your previous question, I wanted to say that I feel like I'm not capable yet of saying that I'm Zimbabwean, because I haven't learned to speak Shona properly. I can understand Shona, but it's not something that I learned growing up, because during the years when I was learning to speak, we were in Kenya and then in South Africa. And so for me, I am completely intent on returning to Zimbabwe one day and actually learning how to properly speak Shona, because I've only lived in Zimbabwe maybe a total of 9 months. And so I feel like after I've properly learned Shona, then I can fully say that I am Zimbabwean, because at the moment it still feels like I'm sort of in between. And it's been a sore point, I think, for a lot of people my age whose family left the country very young. Us not being able to speak the language feels a bit alienating. And so it's definitely one thing that's on my bucket list that's very important for me.
I wanted to just play that music. You know how people go na 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 when you're hearing an excuse coming up, like, you know, somebody's making an excuse.
wrote an article about this for the African Exponent. I wrote an article about the pain of our mother tongue, because for a lot of us young people, the choice for us not to be able to speak Shona wasn't ours. It was our parents. And it was understandable coming after colonialism and apartheid, right?
Of course.
Logic was, well, let's have our children speak English as well as possible. And so I think now, you know, I have conversations with my parents and I'm like, Mom and Dad, you know, I really wish that we had spoken more Shona when I was younger, because we didn't speak it at all. We just spoke English most of the time. And I don't think it's their fault. I think it's just the situation that we were all born into. And so for me, now that I'm an adult, I am taking responsibility for not having learnt yet. It is very hard to do so when you're not surrounded by people who are speaking it. And there isn't an app either, since I'm a millennial. there isn't an app to learn Shona yet. But no, it's for real that I genuinely do want to learn it.
No, but then, you know what? Of all people, right? I'm mm-hmm. on the millennial side. I'm like, mm-hmm. they don't need to be learning the Shona. The reason why I was going, na-na-na-na-na, like, listen, you were Zimbabwean because your parents are from Zimbabwe, but you can't speak the language. You see what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. that's fine. But then I don't think, because you're never going to go to Zimbabwe and sit down with Mbuya and Sekuru and stay there, you know, for life for you to be able to speak Shona. You guys are not. So I say to the parents, well, so you know what? As far as the millennials are concerned, it's like, okay, if I'm never going to go there and sit down and stay there and live there, why should I invest all the time that it's going to take to learn a language that I'm never going to use? And it's like, maybe not. So I know for me, which, you know, I know a lot of fellow Zimbabweans are like, Dr. Stem, you need to encourage them to learn it. I said, no, I don't need to make them have another headache of something that they're not going to use. But there are apps now where you can learn Shona. Mm-hmm. They have apps of Shona, of the Shona language.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh,
I haven't
yeah.
been able to find one yet, but okay.
So
I'll definitely go and look again.
Yeah, and if I, you know, I think I've been forwarded those ones, but people have created those now so that mm-hmm. You can learn Shona English. They have Shona in English, so you can learn it. Because like mm-hmm. I said, it's always good and impressive to Anagogo when you go, which is grandmother, when you go back to Zimbabwe and speak to them in that language. But we could spend a whole, you know, show talking about that, because then I know my mom, your mom, would be happy to know that, you know, we still respect the language and love the language, even though you know it's hard, because then look at where you are now. You probably won't have that many people that will speak to you in Shona, even if you wanted to learn it. So
yeah,
that's out of the card. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, so do you have siblings? Because I didn't even realize that you were only 22. You've done so much. Do you have siblings?
I do have siblings. So my youngest brother is currently in his last year of high school. He's in Swaziland.
Okay.
At the same high school that I went to. It's called Waterford Gamslaba. And my sister is in the U.S. She's studying at Skidmore College, and we're actually going to be graduating at the same time. So May is going to be quite busy for my family, trying to go back and forth.
Oh, wow. But that's exciting.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really, really excited for the both of us.
Oh, wow. Congratulations to you guys. Thank you. I know that must be very exciting. So talk to me about this Africa is not a country video.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with, it's a video blog for those of you that have not seen it. I will have mm-hmm. links on this show for people to, you know, look at it and listen to mm-hmm. it as well. But how did you come about doing this video?
I made this video just after I'd graduated high school. So I had a 9-month gap before university started, from switching over to from the Southern African system to the semester system. And so I was at home in Zimbabwe, actually, and I had recently come back from doing a few trips to see different universities.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this question that kept on coming up about, like, where are you from or what's it like? And, you know, people sort of, when they're getting to know each other, sometimes we put our foot in our mouth. And so a few people asked me questions that didn't sit well with me. And I was sort of getting frustrated with seeing just how little people knew about us. I mean, in Swaziland, I was privileged because we had such an international community, people from all over the world, especially at my high school, which is a very important high school. And I wasn't exposed to that sort of level of ignorance that a lot of people had.
Yep.
And so I sort of decided to make a video about it because I was frustrated. I was annoyed because we from Africa know how amazing our different countries are. We know what we have to offer. But it's this constant battle of trying to convince people, yes, we have infrastructure. No, we don't live in huts. No, we don't see wild animals unless we go on holiday, you know. And so it was from that place that I decided to make this video. And when I first wrote the script for it and then sat down and made the video and my parents saw it, they freaked out. They were like, you can't post this. It sounds so angry and like you don't want to offend people by assuming that they know so little. But I was adamant. You know, this is one of those times in, I think, every Zimbabwean teenager's life where they have to stand up to their parents and say, Mom, Dad, listen, I know that that's what you say, but I'm going to go and do the opposite. And it was terrifying. But posted it because I knew in my heart that this is something that I wanted to say. And I thought that, you know, it was something that I needed to do. And so I did post it, and the reception was just unbelievable. I think now it's at 54,000 views.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it has periods where it'll go mini viral and then quiet down and then mini viral. So I had no idea that it was being sent around on WhatsApp until the most random people just started sending me a video of myself, and that's when I realized. And so some people also tweeting me saying, oh, your video is going viral in Nigeria on WhatsApp. And I'm like, so it was such a surprise, but yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, actually what I'll do as well, you know, I'll talk to my producers for this show on America Out Loud to see if they can put it on my page on America Out Loud, because it's really, really very enlightening video of Africa is not a country, because a lot of people, like Iwani is saying, think that Africa is a country. I've been here in the United States for 33 years, and I still have people that say, how did you get to America? Were you an elephant back or something? I mean, do they have boats that come? And I'm thinking, 33 years I'm in this country, and people are still asking how I got here, if I came here on elephant back. Are you serious? So I was excited when I saw that, and I thought, you know what? She's very right. And then a lot of people also said, oh, that accent, are you from Africa? I'm like, Africa is not a country.
Exactly.
I am from Zimbabwe. And they go, oh, I just heard an African accent. I said, but there's no African accent.
Yes, exactly. Although Hollywood would have you think that there is one African accent.
So we probably should blame it on Hollywood then. The ignorance.
Well, I think one thing that I've learned since I made that video is I think that we also have to take a lot of responsibility on ourselves.
Yes.
Because I realized this after I was having a conversation here in Singapore with a taxi driver.
Okay.
And now taxi drivers in Singapore are notorious for just being problematic when you're having conversations with them as a foreigner. Yeah. And I had this one interaction as I was driving to university. It's this father who also had a daughter in the same university as I am, well, the larger university. And he asked me, you know, where are you from? And normally when people don't really, I can tell people won't know anything about Africa, I just say I'm from South Africa because it's the easiest.
Yeah.
And so I said, I'm from South Africa. And he says, oh, well, I hear it's a beautiful place, even though it has the name Africa in it. And at first I didn't know if he was joking or what was going on. So I just laughed uncomfortably. And then I'm like, what do you mean? And he says, you know, well, Africa is not a nice place. It's underdeveloped and it's dirty and there's people running around naked with spears and da 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 da. That's just our conception of Africa.
Oh my goodness.
I was so shocked because it's like I only have the rest of this cab ride to try and convince somebody that there is civilization, period, in Africa, you know, even though there's social media, there's the internet, there's all sorts of sources. And I said to myself, there's no way that in one conversation I can change somebody's mind in a way to make as much of a difference as I want to.
Yeah.
And I realized that the only way to do it is by continuing to let our African excellence shine. You know, people on the stage now, especially with Black Panther coming out and people seeing, yes, it's a fictional African country and the way that it was handled has been a bit iffy at times, but the fact is that more content is being shown to a wider audience about African narratives, African actors, African accomplishments. And that's what we need to keep doing until people take the initiative themselves to learn about it. So the burden shouldn't be on us necessarily to always be trying to convince people, but as we just keep on going on with our lives and striving for our own excellence, and the rest will follow afterwards. So I think we do need to hold ourselves more accountable in terms of what we're doing and how we're portraying Africa and combating those narratives by doing the most that we can to kind of put our countries and our excellence out there.
You're right. So then, you know, I mean, it gets to be a little bit confusing because then people say you're from Africa and, you know, it is certain. I noticed that you co-founded an organization called Mustard Seed Africa, you see? By that alone, it says, oh, okay, so she's telling us that Africa is not a country, it's a continent, and yet they identify themselves as from Africa, you see? And yet we're not. What do you say to that?
Well, we chose Mustard Seed Africa because we knew that we wanted the organization to be in numerous countries. When it started, we were in Swaziland. Then we moved to Zimbabwe, where we opened our flagship store, and now it's operating out of Uganda as well. And so it was embodying the growth that we want to see happen, is that we want to have a platform for so many different women in various countries in Africa, not just one specific country. And so that was the rationale behind it, because I know that the word Africa itself has now become such a politically charged word, but at the end of the day, it's still something that we claim to as Africans. And I get it, that it's sort of going back and forth between, don't say Africa, be specific, when we're talking to foreigners.
Exactly.
And then for us, we're like, oh, I'm proud to be
African,
and da-da-da-da-da. And it's such a confusing thing, but I think it makes sense to us internally, and for the time being, that's fine.
Okay, so, you know, so Mustard Seed, what is that organization again? It's a non-profit organization, I'm assuming, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a
for-profit?
Non-governmental organization, NGO.
Okay.
And it was started by my mother and I. My mother is really the driving force behind it, but
oh,
I came up with the name.
So you co-founded with mom. That's cool.
Yes. So we had two separate organizations. She had Reach Out and I had Mustard Seed. And so she was already doing handcrafts and I was doing events to raise money for charities and orphanages in Swaziland.
Yes.
There were a lot of orphan children because of the high rate of HIV and AIDS in the country. And so we decided to combine, and I've been learning from her as we go along. She is just this brilliant, brilliant woman with such an eye for design and products. And so she pairs designers with handcraft artisans in mostly rural areas. And then she came up with this event called the Rural to Ramp Showcase. And so it's a quasi fashion show. There's dance, there's folktale, there's poetry, all coming together in this fashion show with some of the most beautiful creations I've ever seen to this day. And so we co-founded it. She is the director and I am the administrator. I do more of the publicity and designing posters and strategy, especially for our website and our soon-to-be marketplace, online marketplace.
Okay.
And so we work as a team, even though we're so far away from each other.
Oh, but that's awesome. Okay, so that's another reason why we were connected, you know, through here, because I can see myself as being a guest speaker for one of those events, because, you know, I'm a motivational speaker, so I will be going to Uganda to speak at your event. So that. So that is awesome. Okay, so you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a quick break and then we'll come back. This is getting exciting, you know, getting to know about all the things that you're doing. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
If you're just joining us, today I'm talking to Iwani Mawocha. She is in Singapore at university, but this is a young, brilliant lady who just mentioned that her mother is phenomenal. But I think, you know what, that is why we have this young, phenomenal young lady with us today, because she's got both parents who have traveled around the world, as she says. She actually described herself on a blog. She has a beautiful blog that I encourage all the listeners to go to her blog, which is Pepper and Soul. I will have a link on our page that you can go and see all the unique blogs that she has. The pictures are amazing that she takes and puts on those blogs. And I've noticed that, you know what, she averages over 1 million people that look at her videos and read her blog. So you want to know who this young lady is. I was telling you about something. Oh, she actually described herself as a hyper polyglot. I have a doctorate degree, and I have not heard of that word. What does that mean?
A hyperpolyglot is somebody who speaks 11 or more languages. And so that's what I aspire to be. I really love languages. I love everything that comes with a language, the understanding behind it, the gestures that you make, the way that you speak and the way that you think. It's just fascinating to me, and especially going into my career as an actor, it's something that's beneficial, is being able to sort of change myself depending on who I am and how I'm speaking and so on. And I think nothing gives you better training for that than learning languages. And so I'm halfway there. I am at, wow, I can speak 6 languages now, and I'm hoping to add on a few more in the next few years.
So which 6 are you speaking now? Do you speak now?
There's English.
Okay.
And my mother tongue, Shona, is still, I can understand it
okay,
and speak it at a basic level, but it's something that I'm working on the most.
Okay.
Then there's also French. I've been learning that for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's Italian, Korean, and Czech.
Wow. That's quite interesting and very impressive. And
thank you.
Yeah, because I was reading on your blog and I thought, wow, she wants to speak that many languages? That is impressive. The other reason why I brought you on my show is I am a big, you know, proponent of working with young adolescents, who, you know, teenagers and young adults. And a lot of times when I talk about working with teenagers and parents, a lot of people think of the negative that the teenagers are doing, because then I always say people start rolling their eyes and go, oh my God, today's teenagers. So I'm so excited, because one of the trends that I'm doing is I am seeking those teenagers or now young adults like yourself that have done phenomenal work and, you know, are not acknowledged, or many parents cannot say, you know what, we have young people that are growing up, you know, the right way and already paving their path in a way that, you know, most people probably can not see or are not recognizing. So I'm very excited to be doing this show with you, and also to let you know that not only am I excited that you know you're doing well, but I'm also excited that you do represent a part of, you know, the country that I'm from, Zimbabwe, as well. So we are proud of you. And on on behalf of all the Zimbabweans, I know a lot of them have been commenting on your video on my Facebook and on WhatsApp. So we are really, really proud of the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the blogs that you wrote, you know, I just couldn't stop reading those blogs. There was just so many topics. And I love the video blog that you did about Harry Potter. That was hilarious. I was just laughing.
Thank you.
So I'll let the listeners, you know, go and watch that one. Tell me about, you know, some of the like probably one of the, you know, blogs that you either wrote or did a video from that you still are excited about and would want people to see about. Which one would you highly recommend? I know,
think the ones.
You have so many of them.
Yeah, there's quite a few. I think the ones that I'm most excited for right now actually haven't been published yet. I have a lot of content that I've scheduled for this year.
Okay.
That'll be coming out in the middle of the year because I have to graduate first.
Oh.
But I have a lot of videos that I'm going to be making about Afropolitanism,
okay,
which is something that I studied and I've realized I identify as an Afropolitan. I used to think that it was just sort of being third cultured or being a coconut, as some people would call me, but I'm really excited about this concept of Afropolitanism, and so I want to talk about that. I've got so many videos from Uganda and Korea from my travels, and so that's what I'm excited about. But I think the blog post that's had the most impact was a post that I made asking the question, is Singapore a racist country? And I never expected it to have so much of a reach, but, you know, I tried to answer that question. Yeah. And at the time, if I knew what I know now, I might have answered it differently. But at the time, I sort of said that, you know, for black people in Singapore, it's very odd because there isn't racism towards us, because racism is systematic. Yeah. And we're not officially in the system because there's not enough of us. You know, there's such a few number of us that for the system to specifically target us would just be very malicious and a lot of effort. And so we exist outside of that system. We're sort of just foreigners. But at the same time, there's prejudice. And the prejudice is something that's really hard to deal with. It's what we call microaggressions.
Yeah.
Is when you feel like you're going crazy because there's so many of these small incidents that are happening and nobody else is able to recognize them a lot of the time. And so I wrote about that thinking, you know, well, this is just my experience. I don't know how many people have been through that. And the people who connected with me the most are Indians in Singapore. And they said, this is my reality. This is my existence. You have dark skin. I have dark skin. We go through so many of the same things. And so the reception from it has just been amazing, from all races in Singapore. You know, people reaching out to say, I'm so sorry that you've had this experience with people from my race. People saying, I'm so glad that you've been able to voice the things that I haven't been able to say about my own experiences. And so I think the Africa's Not a Country video and the Singapore Racist Country blog are two of the things that I'm most proud of.
Wow. Congratulations. I haven't seen that one, so I'll be looking out to read more about that one because I hadn't seen that one. But, you know, the racism, I saw you, you know, writing a blog when you were immortal. I think you mentioned a little bit about that as well. Are you still doing modeling?
I am.
You are?
It's a bit slow. Well, this weekend, luckily, was amazing. I did a corporate shoot and then I did a photo shoot for my friends. So I really felt like I was being very productive and I was really happy to have the jobs. But yeah, it's been tough being a black model in Singapore because there's not that many opportunities. You know, when you go on casting calls, it's sort of you looking out for the keywords, any race is welcome. And those are sometimes few and far between. But what it made me realize is that we need to create our own opportunities.
Yes.
So I'm always going to my friends who are photographers and saying, hey, let's do a shoot this weekend. Or a friend of mine, a fellow actor, decided, let's put on a show with an all-black cast, especially it was on the eve of Black History Month. And so we put together a show where the script was by black female writers. We took little excerpts from their plays. And there were about six or seven of us, black people, black actors in Singapore that we managed to get together. And it was just amazing. It was really fantastic putting that on. So it's sort of going back and forth between feeling despair and feeling empowered, because it's like, well, you know, if only I were this race, or if only I were this much lighter or whatever, I could have gotten more of these jobs, I could have applied to more of these jobs, but then be like, no, I'm very proud of who I am, and if people won't open the doors for me, then I will knock a hole down in a wall and make a door for myself.
You know what? We spoke a little bit, because then I titled this Africa is Not a Country, and we spoke a little bit, but you had some great facts that you shared on that video.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's been a while, do you remember some of those facts that you wanted people to understand that Africa is not a country?
I think one of my first facts was just talking about the size of Africa, because it's a known fact that the way that the world map looks is very manipulated, and so it makes the north look a lot larger than the south. And so many people are tempted to think, oh, well, you know, it's just that smaller country over there. But in reality, Africa is so large, and it could fit the United States and China and a whole bunch of countries in it at the same time and still have space. And so, you know, in the US, there's always those comparisons that people are making of, you know, people from Florida are different from people from New York, and there's the East Coast and the West Coast and the Midwest and da-da-da-da-da, and all these different regions that have very different cultures to them. And I can understand that as a foreigner who's only spent maybe 2 months in the U.S. overall. But, you know, trying to show people that that same comparison that they make can be made five times over for anyone in Africa. And those questions about, oh, you're from Zimbabwe? Oh, well, I met a guy called Akwa in Ghana, and do you know him? And it's sort of the same. It's like, how do you ask someone that when it's such a large space between us, you know, and the cultures are so vastly different?
Exactly.
And so that was one of the big things. It's just saying Africa is actually really, really big.
How many countries, by the way, are in Africa? Because a lot of people don't even know how many countries there are in Africa.
54.
I like the way that you said it on that video. It was so, you know, there are actually 54 countries in Africa. I said, wow. Yeah. And I remember you were also mentioning, you know, what people, you know, how, you know, with the agriculture and mining that we have, that people have no idea that we have a lot to contribute to the world.
Yes.
Because they just see us as a third world country that probably doesn't have anything, any resources at all. But then, you know, we do have a lot of resources. But then you can't blame them, because I think we've been not on the map for a long time because of, you know, political backgrounds in all African countries. Well, maybe not all, but most of them. That it's been difficult for them to also see the good parts, or, you know, what good we had to do. Another blog that I liked, you know what that was? The 25 things that you've learned from living in Singapore.
Oh.
I loved that blog, because I think for foreigners that, you know, in different countries, for all of us that are displaced at home, we've learned almost similar things living in different countries. So I'll tell you which ones, you know, I liked about those 25 things. There's one that you said, whenever you're in Singapore and you are black, you will get excited every time you see another black person.
That one is a very Singapore thing. I can feel it as soon as I leave Singapore and I've traveling back home. I get more excited, and I'm looking and smiling at all these black people, and they don't understand that thing of being such a small minority, so they kind of look back at me like, why is this random person smiling at me? But in Singapore, you know, it's very common. We smile, we give each other nods, sometimes we run up to each other and we say hi. Where are you from? Because there's times you can go a whole month easily without seeing another black person in Singapore. It's insane sometimes. And so it's also a way that we tell who's a foreigner and who's not, because if you nod and smile at someone and they kind of just look at you weird, they're a tourist. And then if they smile back, you know that they live here. So that's a very interesting dynamic that we have.
Oh, wow. So the other one that you also mentioned that I thought, wow, this is quite interesting. You said, don't jaywalk somewhere unless you've seen an auntie do it before. What does that mean?
So in Singapore, jaywalking is illegal, but it's something that happens quite a lot, and most of the people who do it are old aunties and uncles who are just crossing the road with all their bags. And I have never seen such a level of confidence and just not having a care about what happens. They just walk across, and it's like, well, it's my turn to walk across the street. And so if a car comes too quickly, they can stop. I'm walking. And so it's this very funny dynamic that goes on. And I'm just so impressed by how brave they are. And so if I've seen an auntie do it there, then I'll copy her. Or one time even, I was waiting. I kept on waiting to cross the street, and there were cars trickling in. And then an auntie, she must have been about 60, she comes up to me and she holds my hand. And she's like, okay, I'm going to take you across the road. And so on the outside, it looked like I was helping her across the road. But in reality, she was helping me cross the road, because then everyone just stopped. And so we could go through. They let us through. And it was very funny.
Oh, so an auntie. So it was a lady, but that's not your auntie.
It was just... Oh, no.
Because I'm like, auntie, is that your auntie, or are you just saying it?
No. In Singapore, the term of politeness for older people is auntie and uncle. So when you get into a taxi, you say hello, uncle, if he's much older. If from about maybe 60 onwards, they become auntie or uncle. If you call somebody that and they're younger, they might be a bit offended. But
really?
It's the term of respect, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wouldn't have thought that auntie is an older one, but, you know, person. Okay. So then the other thing that you said was there will be days when you don't see a single non. Okay, that's similar to what we just talked, because you said there will be days that you don't see a single non-Asian person. You just mentioned that you probably could even be a month without seeing, you know, non-Asian or non-African person, right? Let me see another one that I liked here. If you're not Asian and you've never lived in East Asia before, you're probably holding your chopsticks wrong. Even if it works for you, it's wrong, and you are dark, and there's a much less painless way to do it. Ooh, talk to me about that one.
One of my first lessons when I moved to Singapore was how to hold the chopsticks correctly, because we were eating a dish called banh mian, and it's this noodle dish, like very thin, flat noodles that are very hard to pick up. And so I'm struggling with this bowl, and I noticed that all my friends are just staring at me weirdly. And they're like, did you ever learn how to hold chopsticks? And I'm like, it works for sushi, it works for big objects. And they're like, no. So the first thing that they did is set me straight and teach me how to hold chopsticks properly. And now I get a lot of compliments when I go eating out places with strangers. They're always like, you hold your chopsticks so well and very elegantly. And so that was thanks to my friends who just corrected me right from the get-go.
Practice makes perfect. I guess you learned that one, right?
Yeah.
I still can't. I still, you know, can't eat with chopsticks. I don't want to lie to you. I still use a fork, wrap it around the fork and eat it. And it still, you know, it tastes delicious, but I'll have to learn one of these days.
Yeah, for sure. It's very convenient and a lot tidier, I think. Well, it can be a bit messy with noodles, but it's tidier in terms of cleanup and stuff. You just wipe down the chopsticks and you're done.
Oh, wow. Korean dramas are everything. So are the cosmetics. Cosmetics, like makeup?
Makeup, skincare. My entire skincare routine is Korean. And I know that that'll be an envy of a lot of people who watch YouTube bloggers online, because Korean products aren't always available in the US, especially. They had to get special shipping sites, but they're so coveted. And so in Singapore, we have a lot of them, and I'm very grateful for it, because, wow, the things that it does for your skin is just amazing.
Really?
Yeah, it's really famous in this region especially.
Oh, I just learned something. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. It is nearly impossible to eat banh mian whilst reading a book. Oh, the banh mian is that meal that you just mentioned, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It requires a lot of attention.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, let me see. I'll do one more. Because I found them quite interesting when I was reading them earlier, preparing for this show. I've never even been to a Korean restaurant now that I'm... Because you say no one makes better fried chicken than Koreans. Really?
Yes. I've had to spend a lot of time trying to convince my family. They're going to be coming to visit me in a few months' time, and that's where I intend to take them. Because Korean fried chicken is very famous. They call it... Chimek is going for chicken, because mekju is beer. So they have chicken and they have beer. And that's the combination that they're always in. And it is amazing. It's crispy. It's covered in these amazing sauces. And it beats KFC and any other fried chicken company, hands down, all the time.
Listen, I thought KFC gave you a sponsorship and you're going to put them down like that?
So I'm happy to say that they've got a big challenge out there with Korean chicken companies.
Yeah, you're like, you know what? We are fond of our Korean, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken. All right, Alrighty, Mani. So, you know what? Let me take another one more quick break and then we'll do our last segment. I won't do the 25 anymore. Let's get into something exciting because guess what? You wrote another blog that I want to talk about and you titled it Remember to Breathe. So think about that for a minute I'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, so we titled this a segment today, Africa is not a country. But in doing so, I also decided that I would talk to our guest today, Iwani Mawota, who is with me today, about the other things that she's doing, because as a young adolescent or a young adult, you know, she has done a lot in preparation for her future after college. So you wrote a blog, and that blog was, you said, and remember to breathe. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
And that was in July of 2014.
I think it was last year.
2017.
Yes.
I'm going back way too long. So you said in that blog, I'll just start it so that you can tell us a little bit more about it. You were asked, you know, what it's like balancing a blog, university, freelance web design, and the beginning of an acting career. And the person said, is it fun or do you sleep? So what was your response to that? Because I liked the way that you responded to that.
Well, I said, is it fun? Yes, of course. But do I get any sleep? Absolutely not. It's been so busy. That post was actually a collaboration. It was a sort of quasi-sponsored post. I was doing a collaboration with a brand called Toby. And so they very kindly sent me some clothes. And they said, you know, we'll just give you... You decide what to do with them and how to style them and so on. And so this was during my summer, my last summer of university, and I had the collaboration with Toby, and then I had 2 weeks on a film set for Crazy Rich Asians, and that was like back-to-back 14-hour days. Wow. Then I was also doing I had a fitting and a photo shoot, and then I was also finishing off a web design for a client. And this was all in the period of less than a month that all of these things had to be done. And it was just crazy rushing around and doing this and that and this and that. And so I spoke to my mom on the phone with very little sleep. And she just said to me, Wani, you got to remember to breathe. Because also when I'm on the phone and talking, I have a tendency to just go, you know, a mile a minute. I can just keep on talking nonstop. And she always has to say, breathe, Iwani, breathe, take a breath, okay? And so it's been a very important lesson for me. It's just, even when I feel like I'm going a mile a minute and I worry that if I stop, then I won't be able to start again, I always have to just breathe and take stock, because otherwise you get burnt out so quickly. And so even though all of these things are really fulfilling, it can end up being harmful if I don't balance my time well.
And you know what's funny is, thank you for that answer. What's funny is I've been corresponding with you on WhatsApp about doing this interview, and you had the theme that I am so busy, Dr. Sam, I'll have to contact you. And then sure enough, you were gracious enough to find time and contact me and said, you know what, let's, you know, do this interview. But as when you were typing in, I could see the anxiety oh my God, I got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this. And I was literally breathing for you as well. You know? So it's interesting how mom, you know, it reminded you to breathe, because then you actually can sense it even in somebody writing or talking, that someone has too much on their plate, but then they're not remembering to breathe. One thing that I find, because then I do this radio, and of course, you know, I'm in full practice. I write books, and I'm also building, you know, a website, which is, you know, I'm building a university, you know, for my courses that I'm putting in online. So I know that, you know, when you talk about it and you look at it sometimes with, you know, the little slip sometimes, it's almost like, oh my God, how am I doing it? But in the end, I think when you look back at this moment that you've been in uni, it's going to be so exciting for you to see what you have accomplished. I think it's going to be, you know, even more exciting when you graduate and look back at everything that you have done. What advice?
Yeah, no, for sure.
What advice would you give other students? Because there are students that go, I don't know how she does it, but I can't do it.
Well, my answer to that would be, yes, you definitely can. It's a matter of deciding how you want to spend your time. So a lot of these things that I do came as a result of procrastination. I sort of told myself, look, I have these assignments that need to be done. I've got schoolwork, and I just can't focus on that right now. I just need a break. But rather than sitting and twiddling my thumbs or watching TV or watching other people make YouTube videos, or especially reality TV, that's another thing, is watching other people live their lives and be successful, I said, well, I'm going to spend my time, quote unquote, procrastinating, doing something that takes myself one step further. So every time I procrastinate, I want to achieve something that takes me one step closer, whether that's even just sending an important email, or whether that's, you know, just opening your computer and starting to edit a video or writing a blog post. That was my rationale. And then as I continued to work on these things, something that I faced a lot of is rejection. That's something that a lot of people are not accustomed to. And it, for lack of a better word, it sucks. It honestly does, getting that rejection letter, or even not even getting a letter at all. Just, you know, you send out asking for an opportunity and you hear nothing back. And so I told myself, my best response to that rejection is my own success.
Yeah.
I'm sort of determined that for every no I've gotten, one day those people who said no to me or ignored me will be the ones knocking on my door. And I'm determined. You know, we always say at home, after we've, so this is a joke that we have in our family. We say, I will avenge. You know, after you know, if we go to someone's house and they're very kind to us, it's like, yes, thank you, I will avenge your kindness. And so I've applied the same thing, that, you know, this rejection is just a way of telling me that I'm not where I need to be yet. I'm not at that level yet. So thank you for showing me that I'm not there, and I will avenge that with my own success.
And one way of also thinking about it, because you know what, when you use the word rejection, it really hurts, because then it says, yeah, then it says that in your mind you start going, maybe I'm not good enough, and maybe I'm, so I would, you know, if I may, you know, suggest that you also look at it, you know, another way. Instead of rejection, it only means that you are not a match, or you're not a fit with their programs. And when you think of it that way, that, you know, maybe we're not, you know, it's because we're not a match. Whether we, you know, when they send you that letter saying, unfortunately, you know, we're not going to be able to offer you this position or this opportunity, it just means that you're not a match with their vision and mission that they are running through, you know, their business.
Exactly.
If you don't get, and most of the businesses, which you will find, because you are a business person yourself, what happens is when you get those letters coming in, emails coming in, and if they're not a match, sometimes you don't even have the time to respond to those people to say that you are not a match and we're not going to be able to use you, and then you just put it in the, you know, trash instead of a to-do basket. And what everybody needs to understand is, if you don't get that response, it's just as good as sometimes, you know, we are not a good match, but sometimes it's because they haven't even opened it, and when they do open it and respond to you, you will have moved on at that time. So it also could mean, yeah, so it also could mean, but I like the fact that, you know what, as you do this, you know, what your best avenge has been creating your own path as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely think it's important for young people now, especially the ones applying to university, the acceptance letters are going to be coming out soon. And that's something that was also very difficult for me, is not getting into the university that I really wanted to. But I think I've realized over time that God closes doors that are not for you, and that's okay. Where I ended up at university turned out to be so much better than the experience that I would have had at the universities that I was rejected from. And I'm so happy with the path that my life has been taking. And so not every rejection is a reflection on yourself or anything like that. It's just a reflection of the path that God wants you to go on. And that's something that took a long time for me to learn. But I definitely know it a lot better now.
Can you do me a favor when we finish this show? Just that part. Can you make me a video, you know, probably like a 2 minutes, 3 minutes video? I have so many students that have not been accepted into the universities of their choice. But sending home that message that you just said will be so helpful, because then that's our message to say, sometimes you have to understand that the best university that you'll be going to will turn out to be the best, you know, one that you were supposed to go to, rather than your chosen one that you had. So send me a video and I'll make it go viral, because a lot of students are receiving their letters or not receiving their letters right now. And I think it'll be very useful for them to understand that, you know, yes, the rejection letter might come and you might not get into the university of your choice, but there are benefits of you accepting and allowing the right university to give you that acceptance letter.
Yeah, I definitely will do.
Yeah.
I'll definitely make that video.
Even 1 minute, because I know you're busy.
Oh, no. Well, it'll be in my video queue, so I'll just move it to the next video that has to come.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I definitely think acceptances are coming out already next month, so it's a very timely thing. Yeah. And also another thing that I say to people is, you know, people always like, oh, I didn't get into Harvard or Oxford or whatever, and it's like, yeah, but if you got in, you'd actually have to go.
Yes,
that's the really difficult thing, is that it's not, the hardest part is not the application, the hardest part is the school itself. And so you want to be at a place where you can thrive and not struggle. And so for people who didn't get into their ultimate top choice or their reach or whatever, think of it as a blessing, because then you're gonna spend your time in university thriving instead of struggling to survive. And I think that's something that not enough people hear. It's not about being in the hardest or top university. It's being at the university where you can flourish more than anywhere else, you know?
You're right.
Yeah.
Now, if I have parents, right, that are listening to this radio show, and they say, okay, how do I get to raise a young, talented, well-rounded young lady like Iwani is, what would you tell the parents? What worked for you? What did your parents do, or what did you do to turn out, you know, as good as you have turned out?
Whew. I think it started from a young age.
Okay.
I think with my parents sort of making me create my own entertainment. So, you know, I wasn't allowed to watch much television. I know this is a different era that we live in, where not many kids watch television anyway, but, you know, the sort of things that I was given to distract me were books and then my own mind, you know? And so a lot of that came out of just being by myself and thinking up stories and creating things and inventing, and just give your kids a lot more to do that isn't the conventional watching YouTube or watching television or whatever. Or if they are going to watch it, find them stuff that's also going to inspire them. Like for my younger brother, he's interested in music producing, so I'm always sending him videos about different music producers and universities that they go to and this and that. So it's about finding what your kid is interested in and then giving them a whole bunch of resources in that thing. So this is so hard to really think about. What was it that really
cinched
it for me? But
you just did good.
Yeah, I think that was a big thing, is that, you know, when my parents knew that I was interested in photography or videography, first they let me use the little dinky family camera before I proved that I had done enough and that I was interested enough that they got me a camera. And when I was interested in books, then they'd help me choose out books. When I was interested in YouTube, you know, they'd even sit with me and watch different YouTube videos that I loved. So it's about being involved and providing the path for your kids to do whatever they feel led to do, but also being stern with them in terms of the things that will help challenge and establish them. So my parents put me through ballet. They put me through extra classes every summer. I used to dread it, you know, my mom would say, your tutor is here. And I'd have to sit down with the tutor for an hour, you know, every single day doing something or the other. And it seemed at the time to just be more and more of my parents controlling me or whatever. But I realized that they were building me up for me to be able to take over the initiative one day. And so that's something that I really appreciate about how they raised me, is holding me accountable, but also giving me the room and the tools to follow what I was passionate about.
I cannot tell you enough how proud I am again and excited, because I know this last question you were not prepared for, but you answered it so well. So thank you for that advice.
Thank you, Dr. Stem.
Yeah, thank you for that advice and insight. And I had a wonderful, wonderful time interviewing you.
So, yeah, thank you. This was fantastic. Thank you so much for reaching out to
me. You're welcome. So, you know what? Let me know if you, you know, start anything, you have events that are going on, let me know. Mm-hmm. And you just, now you have my WhatsApp, you can say, hey, can we do another show? Because there are things that I want to highlight. I would love to have you do that. And once I start, because I'm going to be doing my TV show again and do it, you know, face to face, I will reach out to you so we can do a video interview, you know, the next time.
Okay.
So that's going to be awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So congratulations again on everything that you're doing.
Thank you very much.
And I'll get in touch soon, okay?
All right.
Thank you. And
thank you so much.
For you listeners, thank you so much. That was Iwani that we had, Mawocha. And she's a blogger. I will have all her contact information as well as links to her blog and on my page on the Dr. Stem Show on America Out Loud. As I always say, be encouraged and encouraging.
Thank you.